Commissioner Dexter.
Here.
Commissioner Tracy Prue.
Here.
Commissioner Gorson.
Here.
Commissioner Campos. Absent. Commissioner Campbell. Absent. Commissioner Jackson. Absent. Commissioner Girt.
Here. Great. So do you have a motion to approve the agenda for the November 14th meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Unanimous. So are there any members of the public that would like to address the board for items that aren't on the agenda?
For items not on the agenda?
Yeah.
Yes, I would. Hi, commissioners. It's very nice to be here. I've never attended a library commission meeting yet. I am a member myself of a county advisory commission, the mobile and manufactured. Oh, my name is Jean Brocklebank. another county advisory commission, so I'm familiar with the role of commissions and generally what their job is to do and how they are a place where the public can come and address concerns or ideas. So it's nice to be here. And we attended one of those strategic plan meetings at the Live Oak Library. That's our really our neighborhood library, since we live in Live Oak, although we use the downtown library a lot also, and the Brands 40 library. My husband and I are retired, and we walk everywhere, and so we walk from 7th Avenue to the downtown library a lot, and are here frequently too. The thing that I want at this particular normal communications is I want to share with you something that we did share with Susan at the Live Oak strategic plan meeting. And that is specifically with regard to the food and drink policy of the library. Now, I've lived in Santa Cruz since 1979 and have been to the library for the last however many years it is, 37 years. I am greatly troubled by what has become a policy, apparently, to allow liquid beverages and even food into the library. I did go to the library site and I checked on the policy, which I think referred to liquid beverages, alcoholic, and I think it was updated in 2013. The reason I say this is because I'd like to see the board, with the advice of this commission, and we'll lobby a lot about this, to change that policy, to disallow food and drink in the library. And here's my reason. Library materials, whether they're electronic computers or periodicals or books, are vulnerable. They're vulnerable to food and water spills. And if we have those items in our home and we decide to sit in our home and drink a cup of tea or a cup of coffee while we're reading and we spill, no big deal, because those are our personal books. But the library are commons. They belong to all the people. And if we, as a library, set a policy that says it's okay to have things that can harm the commons, the public reading things, then that's going to happen, and it's going to happen more and more and more. And pretty soon people are going to start bringing pizzas. And then what are you going to say? Well, our policy is this, but you can't bring pizza. And then they're going to bring hot dogs and popcorn. And my thought is that the library is not a place to eat and drink. It is a place to research, study, learn, and that we have to care. It's not a cafe, in other words. And so I'm saying this to all of you tonight to think about this, and I'm going to probably lobby the board also in this regard. And thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to address the board?
My name is Michael Lewis. I live in Live Oak, frequent the Live Oak Library, and also this one is a good deal. In my other life, I'm a museum curator, and it's been my great pleasure over my career in museums to design museum research facilities and repositories. and I've done that in two major university museum situations. One of the guiding principles of building, designing and building repositories is to segregate incompatible activity. And so that you don't have one activity that threatens or even disallows another activity, that it's noisy, it has harmful materials, toxic materials that may affect it. And so I would like to apply that to the idea of food and drink in the library. One of the responsibilities of the library system is the repository for the materials. And the library has a responsibility to maintain those materials in good condition for the common good for the foreseeable future. Obviously, things are going to wear out through normal use, but we want to minimize the chance of any kind of damage or even something that might lessen the use of that material. And so I think while it would be nice to have a place to eat and drink in the library, it's not where there are also materials that are put at risk. And libraries can be designed to do that. And I think this evening in the pictures you'll see some where they do have a cafeteria area that's segregated away from the stacks and from the research areas. And that is something that is positive to do. But I would like to also ask this group, and also we'll be asking others, to rescind the policy on food and drink in the library. I'd also like to talk about noise, but that I think will come up in the later section about design. Is that correct? I noticed there is a notice in there, so if that's okay with you, I'll bring that subject up during that discussion. Okay?
Thank you. Anyone else with address? Great. So now to the consent agenda. Do I have an approval for the minutes from our previous meeting? I printed out the wrong issue, so
Oh, wait, I don't have them printed out.
Well, I have. I guess it's the meeting from
October
19th. So
it was the meeting, the minutes of October 17th.
So I need a motion to approve minutes from October 17th.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Unanimous? I think I can just follow along, but I'll just follow. Okay. So moving on to any member reports. Would you like to make a report this time?
I just have a real quick one.
Great.
For Capitola. The City Council on Thursday approved an architect.
Yay.
So we're feeling like we're really moving ahead. It's Nolan Tam.
Oh.
Who's the?
Nolan and Tam.
A-N-O.
It's N-O-L-L and Tam, T-A-M, out of Berkeley. They've designed a bunch of libraries in this area, as well as others. They designed the Molina Library, Half Moon Bay Library, which is just now going out to bid, and the Los Gatos Library, which you'll see a lot in my presentation tonight, since we toured the Los Gatos Library. Mm-hmm. So we're all very excited.
Great. Okay. Okay. So next item is just confirmation the next regularly scheduled meeting is on December 12th. Wait a minute.
No,
I skipped way ahead. Sorry. Library director report. Yeah, that seems like kind of business there. So.
I've decided that I'd like to start doing written reports because so many things are going on.
Okay.
And I just wanted you to be aware that we're redoing our chart of accounts, the accounting system for the library. This is a response to the county wanting to see more closely the expenditures by branch. We still have a heavily centralized system because of the budget cuts. So our hope is to put this in effect for July 1st. But it will take about years to get any meaningful data out of the system. I wanted you to note that sales tax receipts were actually slightly down, which is, it was considered a good quarter. So that was a little alarming to me, and we're going to have to keep our eyes on that. We're learning that we're likely to have a significantly sized fund balance. We'll know in December. As part of the strategic planning process, what we'll probably do is put together a plan. We have to remember that a fund balance is generally a one-time use fund. It's not reoccurring funds. We did negotiate a really different agreement with the City of Santa Cruz for overhead administrative costs. So there's a small amount of funds. There's a small amount of funds that are available in a recurring way. I have to say that greatest pressure right now is to use that to add hours. Janice is going to talk about strategic planning. We're undergoing a major reorganization. We are taking our librarian staff, which is all housed downtown, and pushing them out to all the branches. Our goal, and there'll be downtown staff as well, but right now all of our staff are on the road a great deal, and I think it's relatively inefficient. My hope was to have librarian staff at every single branch. We have some space issues where we can't accomplish that, but we're going to try to push them out at least as far out as we can get. You know, Felton still does not have any capacity to absorb any staff whatsoever. La Selva Beach is the same. In the meantime, we have two major retirements that we're facing in the senior administrative level. We've come up with a new org chart that we're proposing to the city and the JPA that would basically create an assistant director position again. Honestly, my hope is to recruit Janice. Janice is also eligible for retirement, and the thought of losing our three senior staff person when I'm new and from out of state was very stressful to me. And my hope is that we can find a way to create a year or two bridge opportunity so that we can manage these changes with people that have some history in the organization. The other concept is to demote two of the division managers and create, we're probably going to go back to regional managers again. Right now we have semi-professional staff managing the branches. According to the union contracts, they cannot manage the librarians.
Oh.
And so we need to have some sort of regional staffing so that they can be managed. And also it allows us, when we're still really short on staff, to maybe think more geographically. So the concept would be that there would be the valleys, Scott Valley, Felton, and Boulder Creek as one region. What is the City of Santa Cruz libraries as North County, and then the remaining four is South County, and that they would especially plan programming together. The idea, though, that all of the programs and services would be available. This is gone through several of the preliminary processes. We had a labor management committee meeting. We've talked to all the staff about it. We'll have to develop a proposal for the city council, and we'll have to develop a proposal for the JPA in order to get it in place. Gail, who is currently managing all of these areas, is expected to retire in March and has agreed to stay and train in sort of the three area managers, which will also give us some capacity to manage through this change. Overall, the staff have been very supportive. What is really interesting is I do think that the staff has missed the breadth of opportunity for professional relationships that happen when you're housed locally. You know, you get to know the school librarians, you get to know the community. I also think they liked the broader responsibilities because we, through the worst part of the recession, split them into programming and reference, and I think the vast majority of them are ready to go back and do both. I do not want to step backwards on programming. I actually think the system made huge progress in this huge recession on programming. So we're having lots of conversations about how we can maintain those in some cases, cutting-edge activities. And it was very interesting as we went out, and talked to the public, how much discussion there was about wanting more programming. So lots going on. I started a labor management committee. Right now, all our union meetings happen with the city and or in front of the JPA, interestingly enough. And I really feel it's important to work really closely with the unions, but I'd like to solve more of our problems, locally.
So you don't have, I'm sorry to interrupt, so you don't have negotiating or bargaining separately?
The city negotiates all the libraries. And there, and right now, all of our employees are city employees. And so we have a large employment group. We have some interesting, you know, we don't work 9 to 5. We work 7 days a week. We have a lot of temporary employees. So we have a lot of really special issues. So I invited both unions to come and meet with me monthly with their professional staff as well as the local representatives. We've had 2 meetings. I think it's going well, and I think it will actually lighten the load at the city and solve problems earlier rather than waiting until they bubble up to that level. And then the last thing is we're taking a new approach with the Friends of the Library, and it's sort of a embrace the friends. I think it's absolutely essential for the library and the friends to be totally in sync and facing the same direction. And I think in many ways we need to be organizationally closer. So what is on the table right now, they are currently in the front lobby space of the main library. The bookstore would stay there, and the office for the bookstore would stay there, but the exterior office, which is where Vivian now sits, who's mm-hmm. their professional mm-hmm. staff person, we would like to change into a veterans center, which we got a recent grant for. And it was just a great public use of some very prime real estate. And in exchange, we'd like to move the Friends into the administrative office suites of the library. And that, we're meeting on Tuesday and Friday trying to complete that. And I apologize, this is a lot of administrative stuff, but there's a lot of changes going on that I think you need to be aware of.
That's good.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
So,
that's really
I think that's all.
I have a question on the, going back sort of towards the beginning on the budget. And particularly when you talked about, you know, the fund going out of the year having some surplus. One of the things that I always had difficulty doing when I was on boards, particularly the first couple of years, was making decisions on budget. Without understanding the longer-term context. And so we eventually did put in place, and finance took this over and did it after the first year, a forecast, if you will, for the next, I can't even remember what it was, but at least 2 years to 3 years, and which really then helped understand if I make a decision this year in, for example, increasing hours somewhere, how does that flow through for the next 3 years, given estimates on revenues, expenses, et cetera, et cetera. It's a, you know, it doesn't get down into the details, but it takes the major big buck categories. And
if you'd like, I can bring you the forecast we did this summer. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a relevant question. We begin to go into the red in 18-19, because our benefit costs are growing at a much more dramatic, and healthcare and PERS. So the other thing I would say is if you look at our revenue, it has been capped by the latest agreement of the JPA. So they have set a static amount on the MOE funds that can't grow. And while they seem very determined to keep that the way it is, I do have to say that that is a choice that the JPA is making. And it is creating an excess fund at the county level. And some of you probably know the history better than I do on these issues. One of the things I do get the sense of is that Susan Moriello and the county in particular are interested in adding hours. Mm-hmm. So I can show you those predictions, but there are several assumptions that are being made that are actual choices. The other thing I would say is I really don't know what the election is going to do. You know, I think a history of very conservative federal governments are that local governments' human services gets cut. And I find that libraries often get reductions when local governments are facing cuts to human services because the local government starts making difficult choices. So that, you know, that's just me speculating at this point. But I think it will be interesting to see that economists predictions in the next, 3 to 6 months in terms of what that means. And, you know, you have to realize that public sector growth and private sector growth can be very different. So,
right. I mean, one of our city council members went to a statewide meeting, and I don't know who sponsored it. I can't remember that part. But she reported out that there was an economist there talking about, you know, what's happening in the state. And they were sort of predicting that there would be a recession happening within a couple more years.
We're due for one.
Right. Anyway. Right. I mean, and that was, I think, before the election.
Yeah.
So that, you
currently,
know.
Currently, we did follow the last board's recommendation. We have a 15% reserve. But it may be the time to begin to increase that because, again, many of you know the consequences of not giving time to scale back. In the last round, they had to take the cuts rather dramatically and rather quickly. So, okay.
I had a question, Susan. So the VETS program, is that being in conjunction with the VETS Center down in Santa Cruz, or the, you know, downtown Santa Cruz?
And so the grant really specifies that we work with the veterans programs in our community. We're partnering with, I think, 5 veterans programs in the community. Mm-hmm. And I know we're doing the one on Front Street, mm-hmm.
right.
and we're doing one with the county. We've got the 2 universities on board because they each have veterans programs. Mm-hmm. And I'm missing the 5th. But the point of the grant really is to not duplicate what's already there. One of the wonderful pieces is that a huge part of our homeless population actually are veterans.
Yeah.
And so it does allow us to serve them. We've got a lot of volunteers coming in to work on the project.
That's
it's going to start mid-December.
And what are the services that will be offered?
Mostly resources and referrals.
A lot of the veterans are not in the basic program. When they separated from the service, they didn't necessarily get into the system to receive benefits, and this goes all the way back to the Vietnam War. So a lot of what they do is to help people understand that they still qualify for benefits and what those benefits would be, and help them get in the system and sign up so that they can get the support they need.
And I think the assumption is that a library is often a safer place,
mm-hmm.
that people might be more willing to ask some basic questions.
But it'll be restricted to veterans, so you have to have some proof of being a veteran,
mm-hmm.
when you go into that space.
I think. I don't think. I asked David how we're going to do this, and the current recommendation is to not make them demonstrate
uh-huh.
in any way, but to trust. And so we're going to start there. A lot of the programs would help them if they weren't
doing
it.
When they start filling out the forms.
Yeah.
Do you have a question? No. Oh.
So our first item of general business is a 21st century library tour presentation from Barbara.
All right. So we titled this The Design Possibilities for a Modern Library in Capitola, but it does apply to any place outside of Capitola as well. And we thought that to imagine what's possible, we needed to go and experience 1, 2, 3, 4 modern libraries so we could get inspired and see what was out there. So the city of Capitola organized a tour of 4 recently built libraries. And we definitely saw on that tour that libraries really reflect their surroundings and their role in the community. And each of the libraries we toured, which were the Scotts Valley branch of the Santa Cruz system, the Los Gatos Library, Santa Clara Northside branch, and the San Jose Pearl Avenue branch, each of those had very different surroundings and very different communities. And we really saw that that resulted in different design styles. And yet, we also found as we were going through that tour, there were a lot of common themes that emerged.
The library is closed tonight.
So we were met by the architects at each of those libraries, so we had them to talk to. Of course, there was library staff available to tell us what was really going on. And we had some of our library staff accompany us as well. So afterwards, the members of the Friends, Capitola Friends, who had been on that tour, met together to talk about what we'd seen, what we liked, what we didn't like. And out of that, we consolidated all of that, sort of tried to categorize it a little bit. And then Gail Ortiz, Tony Campbell, and myself collaborated in putting this presentation together. It's going to be all images, mm-hmm. most of which are of the four libraries we toured. But in going through, we sort of thought, oh, gee, we have this thing we want to point out, but we don't have a picture that would show that. So I went out on the internet, of course, and I think Tony did as well, and we found images of other libraries that hopefully showcased certain points or gave a different viewpoint on some of the points that we were making. So first category we came up with was what the building looks like, the facades. And what we found out was that some libraries are really designed to be right there as community civic centers, and mm-hmm. communities are very proud of them, and they have imposing facades. This is an example of one of those. This is the Santa Clara Northside Library, and it was newly built in a community that is a new planned community. And so they had nothing. They had no community center at all in that community, and it was a dense community. It's in the middle of Silicon Valley, surrounded by highways and high-tech companies, sort of isolated. And so I think they really wanted this to be a showcase and to gather people. Also, you can't see very well from this image, but it has a stone exterior. And the architects did tell us, yes, it's more expensive to use that material to build, but maintenance is way cheaper. Once you've got it. This is the San Jose Pearl Avenue Library, which is a neighborhood library. And you can see that, in fact, it doesn't even face the street. The entrance faces the parking lot, whereas the Northside Library, definitely their entrance, they have a big entrance right there on the street. So this library wanted to fit in with the neighborhood. And this is the Los Gatos Library, which the architects that built this are the architects that Capitola hired. This is a huge library. This is 30,000 square feet. It is the only library in Los Gatos. It is clearly a very imposing structure. It's a very large structure. But it is also in their civic area. It's right next door to their civic center. And it's not right on the street. There's a big parking lot in front of it. I think the civic center next door is probably right on the street. And you'll see in some later images, it is also set behind it is a wooded area. Mm. And so it's sort of, perhaps they wanted to set it back into the wooded area because there's some great views of that from the library. And last, there are some libraries that take over existing buildings, which is what Scotts Valley did. They took advantage of an opportunity, and certainly in retrospect, that was really smart since redevelopment went away.
Yeah.
And they made a choice to spend their money inside the building in the renovations. They did not make any significant renovations on the outside. And you'll see later that when you walk in those doors, there is a huge wow factor inside that building. And that was a obviously a conscious decision that they made. The next thing we talked about were exterior spaces. All the libraries that we visited, toured, had exterior spaces that were well used. This is that first library, the Northside branch, and they had a very imposing entrance. They had this large front courtyard. It was a place well used. I'm going to show you a picture from looking at it from the entranceway out. Across the street, you can see there was a newly developed retail area. We were there late morning, and there were lots of strollers and babies and toddlers there. I mean, unbelievable number. And so one of the things that came out for us was the recommendation, if you have a lot of children, toddler, baby age, which Capitola already does, and I'm assuming that will increase when we build a larger and nicer branch, you need to have a stroller garage for people visiting.
Everywhere needs that.
And this outdoor area is a multi-purpose area. They actually do Zumba classes there. They do events there. It has speakers built out there, so you can have speakers. You could have events and do programming there, as well as it just being a place for people to gather and socially and meet each other.
Is that covered like glass? So it's like a,
or is it just a pergola?
I can't quite remember that.
It looks like glass.
I think it would stay dry. Yeah. This is a smaller courtyard. This is in the back of the Los Gatos Library. And you can sort of see some of the trees back there. But this was a really nice little courtyard. In fact, we went out there at the end to talk with the architects and library staff. There wasn't a meeting room available for us, and so we went out there and had a nice conversation. It has little small cafe tables, benches, chairs, really, really comfortable place. Los Gatos also had an outdoor children's garden, which was so charming. You really can see the wooded area behind from this location. And one of the things we all just loved was, of course, they have to have a wall around the outdoor children's space so they don't escape. And this one is, I don't know if you can see it that well, but it's books. It's spines of books with real book titles on them. And I understand that each of those was sponsored.
Oh, good idea.
And it was just extremely, extremely charming.
And see the sail above so that there's a little shaded space.
There was shade. And, you know, it was just great. And there were kids out there when we were there. This is the Scotts Valley outdoor area. It runs across the back of their library. It was funded by Friends. The Friends raised the money for this because the money was not in the budget. It was in the plans and in the design, but they did not have the money to do that. So the Friends raised it. It is very well used. I love it. It has great natural landscaping.
It looks like an architectural rendering. It doesn't even
look
real.
It really is. And great big umbrellas, because it does get pretty sunny up there in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And it as well is used for events. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's used for programming.
Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. And you can access this as well from the outside. So you could do after hours events. Yes. And it is also connected to the Scotts Valley community room. So you could actually do an event that utilized the patio as well as the community room. It's very well used. And this one I had to put in. I found this one. It's certainly not a modern library building. It's from the UK, I think. But they took an atrium and put a glass roof on it. And they now have an indoor garden with library materials and tables and library space in there. And I thought that was just great. It's just thinking a little differently. Because in Capitola, we may be pressed on having much outdoor space because we already have a tot lot, which is great, and we want to keep that. But we're probably not going to have a whole lot of extra outdoor space available to us. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, this is just, you can really think creatively. Maybe do one of those wall gardens that you can do inside, so just to bring the outdoors in.
It's the Gardner Museum in Boston. It's beautiful. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. This was more for Capitola. I'm not going to talk too much about this. Mm-hmm. Just ideas. We, as we were talking about it in our little friends group, we just wanted to jot down things that I'm sure architects know already. But we had good creative discussions while we were having that. So we also said, boy, a lot of color and light going on in modern libraries. Mm-hmm. They are big, open, airy spaces. Lots of natural light for most of them, which is great to have. They also used color very effectively. In one of the libraries, color was used to designate, you know, the function of that area. One of the issues with large open spaces is, of course, noise. I know that there are ways for buildings to be built to make that less of an issue. And Scotts Valley, I believe, is thinking about purchasing some kind of digital acoustic system that would damp down or cancel the noise, because apparently it gets pretty noisy in there.
What was that one? Do you know what that library was?
No.
Oh, okay. So that
I don't think it was one we toured.
It wasn't one you toured.
It wasn't one we toured.
Okay.
This is the Northside Library, which didn't have as much of an open, airy feeling as some of the others, but it did have natural light. But what I thought was very creative from a color standpoint is they had a theme, which they explained to us was a tapestry theme. In the color and design and interior design of the library. 95% of their community is Asian, from all over Asia. So they have, and mostly first generation, upwardly mobile immigrants.
95%.
And so they have new people to our country, new people to this area, who come from all over Asia and have very dissimilar cultures. Not to mention languages. So they really wanted the library to be a place to draw this community together and unite them, and so they came up with, I thought was great, this tapestry theme to weave the different Asian cultures and people together in this library. So you can see the lighting on the top is sort of like threads going through a tapestry. You don't see it so well on the carpet here, but I think I have another slide later that shows it, and the carpet had the same thing. So that was, I thought, it really interesting thing. This is the same library, different place, and I liked the fact that you can't really see in this picture too well, but there's greenery outside. This library was built next to a park, and I really thought they used great color to have the wall be green there to sort of draw the outside into the library. This is the Los Gatos Library, second floor. Very open, airy, and light. And I have to say, the first floor was equally open, airy, and light. I don't know how they did it because it was the first floor, but they did. One of the things that can be done is along the sides of this floor are study rooms. I think there was a computer center. There's a teen space. And they use glass walls to wall them in. So that allows the natural light to flood into the rest of the floor. And it then gives noise protection either for in the teen area, the noise doesn't escape, and in the reading and study areas, noise doesn't come in. Mm-hmm. So they really used that effectively.
Is that another floor, or is that outdoor lights or outdoor windows at the top?
It's clear story windows.
It's clear story windows.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's two stories.
Okay.
And I recommend
so they have a higher ceiling
going to see that library. Yeah. It's
amazing. Pretty cool.
Obviously, children and teen rooms are really important. All the libraries have them. And we got a bunch of sort of general recommendations from the libraries and the architects. One of the reasons for having an open, airy space is to have good lines of sight for library staff to see the children's area, to see the teen area, without having to add extra staff to be there all the time. We were told it'd be great to position the children's area, if you can, near the community space, because children's programming tends to have the largest audience, and you can use that community space for programming when you have large groups. We were told from a teen standpoint, get the teens to give you input on the design and what they want to do in their area, because they give you great input if you listen to them. We were told to keep the teen areas away from the children's, because the teens do not want to be anywhere near the children's area.
I have a question, though, about, you know, we asked the teens today, you know, what they were, how do we make sure it's withstand some test of time?
Right.
You know, because their interest in fads evolve and...
Yeah, I mean, Susan probably knows the answer to that far better than I.
Well, I've done those processes. So for me, just frugality, I like to use color on things you can paint.
Yeah.
I don't tend to like to do colorful furniture because that has to last longer. If you look at BOMA, which is building maintenance, people have standards. Furniture should, in a 9-to-5 environment, be replaced every 7 years with a max of 11. So I think you can have some fun and funky pieces that are in style, but you have to realize then you have to replace them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the avocado refrigerator too long.
Right.
But I do think, I think there's a place for the input. I think it also gets them invested
of
in
course.
The space.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that. It's just how do you plan?
Well, I mean, they're not going to... direct the design.
Yeah.
They're getting input.
I would
the
say
architects should have, I think, in community meetings or when you're asking the teens, the architects and library staff involved can try to draw that out and ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm. I also like, with both children's and teens, to not spend a fortune on like one piece that stays forever. I think even with art, it's important to switch it around and move around. I know one library spent $100,000 on this huge dragon, and then it had "don't touch" signs all over it.
No.
And it's like every kid went nuts and cried because they wanted to touch the dragon. And you know, the dragon was darling for about 5 years, but the dragon really started to get old. And so I think
that's my
point. Well, I was going to say earlier too about functionality, like teens. I mean, there's a certain, and I don't want to tie it to like Common Core is the new in thing for education, but there is this emphasis on, you know, teens are young adults. We're having group learning. I think modeling college library structure a little bit for that age of youth. And so safety level, we can still see them, but like group study space. Teens don't have a place to be together, to communicate and to collaborate. And that's so key to what's going on in education now. And I don't see that changing. And if it did for some reason, we'd still always need, I think, study space.
I can't imagine that changing.
Because UCSC is incredibly impacted. Their library is just, there's no space for students. So even, you know, I could see an overspill. So I would say, like, more of a functional space versus a vision, like the prettiness of it.
Right,
but the actual functionality, I think that if we built that into our teen spaces, it would well serve us on into the future. And we can always just, you know.
Well, there's also teens and there's tweens.
Mm-hmm,
and they're really different.
Mm-hmm,
and so the teens... The older teens really like that pre-college look and feel. But the tweens are somewhere, they are in between the kids and the teens. So, that's just an observation about where their heads are at. I mean, middle school kids are very unique.
And the tweens
brains.
So desperately want to be in the teen room. And the teens so desperately don't want
to be. Yeah.
So that's
sister,
an
big
interesting
sister.
Challenge to find age appropriate. Again, I think also a lot of facilities focus on the 0-to-5 pre-learning, and we kind of leave a gap around, this is true of programming too, elementary age, especially once they've learned to read.
Yeah.
And so we've got to try to find spaces that are flexible enough to create learning experiences for that spectrum of learning need. But I agree that the little, it used to be we built single study rooms, and I think you're seeing little small groups.
Because even in middle school,
well, that's
even
what I was
middle
say,
school,
they
the Common Core, they are doing collaborative, you know, that's at every level. And they're in math and everything is all collaboration. So a place where they can talk and not be disruptive, you know, talk and you know, be tweens and be teens and not have
and
to
work on a project.
And work on a project.
I
think
we
really
saw study rooms in all libraries.
Great.
This is the children's room in the Los Gatos Library. It's huge. I think they said it was 6,000 square feet.
7,000 square feet.
But
so Capitola's 4,000 square feet.
Yeah. But it was obviously great. Open, airy, lots of natural light, and great art in the children's area. I'm going to show you these little, they call them nurdle nooks. And they're not, I saw them elsewhere in other libraries when I was looking online, so they didn't invent them. But great place for kids to lounge. And in Los Gatos, they had sort of an astronomy theme going on with, you'll see the piece of the artwork later, but the ceiling artwork was constellation, and these are planet nooks. So
is that to the outside, or are those just lights behind the color glasses?
It was on the outside, but I don't know. It's outside.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I loved about them is kids were reading in them.
Yeah. Oh,
I'd like to go
for that one. So this is a cozier feeling children's area. It's a smaller library. This is the Pearl Avenue Library in San Jose. And you can see in here, the furniture was interesting because they had upholstered furniture that was sort of interesting. They had like the small table and chairs for the kids, and they also had some other sort of Ottoman plush looking things over there by the books for anybody to sit on. And a variety of seating options was very, very common throughout the library, but also in the kids' area. This was not one of the libraries we toured, but I just loved the color, the graphics, also book bins. You'll see smaller shelving in the kids' area. You'll see a lot more face-out books because kids aren't going to choose a book from the spine. And so these book bins, in this case, they were raised sort of like in an old-fashioned record store, so the kids could just go through all the, just tactile, go through it all and see what book they wanted.
That's an interesting little reading nook there.
And
with
that was
two
so
kids.
Great. I know, I love that.
Did they have to climb up like on a little ladder?
I don't know if that was a piece of art.
I don't know. It was just a picture.
That's kind of fun. It looks like an aquarium.
Yeah.
I know. So there's all sorts of very creative things that can be done. This is the Scotts Valley children's area, and it's really a very light, airy space. It doesn't, the windows are all to the back here. You know, we'd be standing in front of the windows looking. Mm-hmm. But again, a variety of furniture, the computers in all of the children's areas. And this has interactives, which are those brightly colored sort of plywoody things that help kids learn developmental skills that they need for reading and writing probably as well, I'm guessing. This is not a library we toured, but this one I just love the color. I love the ceiling.
Is it a map?
Hmm?
Is that a map on the ceiling? Or
I don't know.
Clouds?
I don't know. And one thing I'd like to point out is you'll see those shorter shelvings, but in here they have wheels on, casters and wheels. So in a situation like that, you could move those and make that space flexible if you wanted to have a program there. So flexibility was really a key word. This is the Scotts Valley teen area, so it doesn't have glass walls around it or any walls around it, but definitely its own area, delineated by the fact that it's raised up and also delineated by those what looks sort of like paper lanterns hanging down. Those are huge, and they think they're called lanterns, and there's solar tubes up there, so they bring in natural light into the interior of the Scotts Valley area, and they can also architecturally define a space.
They might want to change that carpet sooner than your avocado refrigerator.
So again, a variety of seating. There's the carpeted risers there. There's booths in the back, which the teens love. There's some stools and some plush furniture as well. And so, and this is all of the teen spaces, extremely well used. For socializing, reading, studying, gaming, and probably many other things. This is a teen area that is enclosed with glass with a study area near it. So again, that just shows the glass walls really allow the light to come through. This is another teen area that I just thought was colorful and different from the ones that we've seen. So, of course, we also need spaces for work, study, and reading in a library. And one of the, this is not a library we toured, but I included this because it shows the diversity of furniture and the diversity of seating in most of these libraries. So what we noticed was reading areas are scattered around the library. You might have an area that has, you know, more of a reading room kind of feeling, but sort of every little nook and cranny, you'd find something, whether it's a study area or a reading area, and the furniture wasn't all the same. So you'd have places for individuals to sit. You'd have places for a couple of people to gather. You'd have collaborative spaces. And in this, you can see it has a typical sort of library table with chairs, but in the background, there's some upholstered plush seating, and there's some computer seating and tables. The other thing that we saw and heard is that generally the study, reading, work areas are around the edges of the building to take advantage of the natural light, and the shelving tends to be more in the center. This is Los Gatos. This is a study area. And behind it is a separate computer area. They are glass walls. And what I really liked was they took a glass wall and made it an art piece with that etched, what is looks like tall grass.
Yeah,
which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And this, I don't think, has this, but there exists the ability to have folding glass panels so that you can actually open up the entire space and have it become part of the library to make it a multi-purpose or flexible space if you want it. Scotts Valley took down a wall between two of their smaller study rooms because they had a very persuasive knitting club who lobbied because they couldn't fit into the smaller ones. And so from a flexibility standpoint, also thinking about walls that could be movable and you wouldn't have to actually take a whole wall down.
Yeah.
So it could be flexible. Two smaller rooms, one larger room. This is Pearl Avenue. Fireplace is what I wanted to point out here. Fireplace is a great gathering spot to have for a reading area. And a number of the libraries do have it. This is a reading area in the Los Gatos Library. In the back, the courtyard we saw in the beginning is behind it, so it opens out to that courtyard so that it gets good light. And what I wanted to point out, it's not a huge area. You can see there's only probably four or five chairs there, and there is a very contemporary fireplace there, and then a couple of tables. But the shelving, which looks like newspapers and periodicals, is on wheels. And so you could very easily move those out and gather more chairs there. You could have programming. You could have an event. Very, very flexible.
So they do a lot of poetry there.
This is just because I liked it. But also showing the light and the color. Mm-hmm. Like this is a reading area that could easily be transformed into almost any other kind of space to be used. And this is not like a whiz-bang area here, but it's just a simple table and simple chairs, but because it's placed next to those windows and because there's greenery outside, it's a really pleasant feel to sit there.
And I don't think we should discount the fact that there are people that just want to go to a little nook that, you know, is separate from a group reading area.
Yes, exactly. And most of these libraries did have that ability for
adult nooks.
Mm-hmm. Adult nooks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. And library staff as well needs space to do their work out in the not behind the scenes. And this was a UK library, the Newcastle City Library. It was a new library, and they called them inquiry desks. But they just had these tables out in the middle of the room there, and not, you know, big big counters that the staff stands behind. But they're sort of out there in the middle of the action and are very approachable.
So like point of service stations or something?
Almost, yeah. And then these are just some unusual options, just to get your creative juices flowing. But I love this. You could put those together. You could move them anywhere. They could be reading areas, study areas, meeting areas. Very flexible and whimsical. And the same with this. A little totally movable pod for a small meeting room or study area. And then, you know, you can get whimsical, especially in the children's area. I loved this. It's an old fan or jitney or something, and it looks like it's probably used for some kind of crafting programs. But what kid would love to have that in their children's room? And we're talking cafe-style seating. This is the Scotts Valley Library. Looks like it was before it was open. There's nothing there. And it never looked like that again, I'm sure. But they have booths, which is very, very, very popular with the teens. But more traditional cafe-style seating. This is not a library we toured either, and obviously a large one, because it looks like they have a pretty large cafe area there with a robust cafe behind there serving food and beverages. One of the things we talked about in our Capitola meeting. Of course, when we talk about cafes or cafe-style seating, we all turn and look at Neil Ortiz.
So, oh, right, of course.
We are likely not to have space to actually have a cafe. But we said, you know, you can still have cafe-style seating. And we thought that wouldn't it be great to have cafe-style seating for a reading area, a social area, a multi-purpose room, and really sort of pay homage to our beloved and now closed Capitola Book Cafe. Mm-hmm. We apparently, Gail, in her wisdom, when the Capitola Book Cafe closed, she got the drawings of, I don't know if you ever went there, there were big pieces of art with authors. And the city, Capitola has been storing them. And when she did that, she promised the owners that they would be put in our new library whenever we built it. So we thought, wouldn't that be cool to have a little cafe seating area that is reminiscent of our beloved institution that is no longer.
And you know, we do have a growing and robust food truck culture. That would be great to have, you know, an agreement where we have space for a period, at least for coffee or something. So that it isn't really on the site, but it is available, so that would be great.
Yeah. Donor recognition. In all of those libraries, there were donor recognition signs around. And this was Los Gatos, and they had a number of different ways of recognizing their donors, because they clearly had lots of them. at all levels of donation. And so this was in that outdoor courtyard. There's leaves on that back wall where leaves with people's names on them. They also had a big screen, a digital screen, in their entranceway area with scrolling with names, I think, of big ticket donors and what they had done. Scotts Valley has, among other things, they had an old card catalog and used the face of it.
Oh, yeah.
And if you donated a certain amount, you got to put your name on one of those card catalog drawers. So there's all sorts of creative ways of recognizing donors, and we need to start thinking about that in Capitola. And then shelving, so we'll get to the heart of the library. Mm-hmm. In general, bookshelves tend to be a little lower to keep the open, airy feel. They're definitely lower in the children's space. In this one, you can see the face-out books at the ends of those bookshelves that definitely draw people there to take a look at them. I think I said before, the shelving tends to be in the middle of the space. And so here's another. This was the Northside Library. A different look for their sort of translucent kind of ends of theirs, more industrial looking, and lights attached to the top so you can see what you're trying to find a little better. But Susan pointed out
if you do that, you decrease the flexibility of being able to move those shelves around, because now they've got electrical wiring coming up out of the floor.
And the shadows don't work. Yeah. It looks like it should work.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It usually doesn't.
I really love the use of clear story and natural light as the alternative.
Yeah. This is the same, the Northside Library, and again, you see that tapestry theme here. But what I was trying to point out was the lower left here of this picture, which is a browsing section, which many libraries have, usually near the entranceway. And people who just pop in, either return a book, do something quick, and they can easily browse and grab something. Children's area, we already talked about this, a lot of face-out books in children's areas for obvious reasons. This was not a library we saw, but again, I liked the fact that these were on wheels and could delineate a space. They could make a sort of a little semi-enclosed area for a group to sit or to have some privacy from the rest of the library and then easily move that away. Community meeting space and programming space. Capitola community definitely wants a community meeting room. The question that will come up, and we'll have to decide on some priorities, is we would probably like a multi-purpose room that is a community meeting room, and also can provide spaces for events and programming. And what percentage of your time are you going to allot to the actual community meeting versus library
programming
and library use? So that's an interesting topic that I'm sure Capitola will have fun discussing. But multi-purpose, flexible are the watchwords of the day for this kind of space. We were told, if you can, place it near the children's area, because children's programming, again, it has the most biggest audience, and they can overflow into this meeting area. If it's used for programming, have plenty of storage in there, have a sink in there, have a multimedia wall. Put it on the ground floor if you have a two-story library, so that the staff can oversee it, and it can be used for library purposes during open hours. And design it so it can be accessed from the outside, so it can be used after hours without library staff.
And you can also need a bathroom nearby.
Exactly.
That you could also...
Yeah, and you'll see, that Scotts Valley did exactly that, and I have a picture of that. This is just pulled off the internet, just showing flexible space. You could do anything in that space. This is Scotts Valley. They have a fireplace there. It can be configured any way you want. They have a great media wall, and it's well used. If nothing's happening in there that's scheduled, patrons come in and just sit there, a little quiet, just sit there and look out the window at the nice patio in the back. It is accessible from outside. There is a little kitchenette, and you do have access to bathrooms without being able to access the rest of the library. Mm-hmm. Here's one with glass walls. Again, it would be great if you could have those folding back glass walls where, when you weren't having a meeting, it just becomes part of the library, the rest of the library space. Public art. That was sort of an eye-opener. Really thought that public art is like the heart and soul of the libraries. It really creates a welcoming space and sort of an awe-inspiring place. This is Los Gatos. They obviously had a big budget for public art. But this is a glass wall separating the staircase from whatever was happening over in the rest of the library, and they took an opportunity to make a piece of art out of that. So one of the things we learned was the architect, when designing the building, needs to think about designing and incorporating art into the architecture of the building, so into a wall, into a ceiling. And the architects, Nolan Tam, did a great job of doing that with the Los Gatos Library. This is Pearl Avenue. These are our glass windows that have photovoltaic cells in them that power a big light that hangs down near the entrance. This is just another example of the etched glass. And this is not any libraries we toured, but more traditional forms of art in the library. These are murals. And looks like it, they're depicting some, probably the history of the community that that library is in. There's an outdoor mural, which you can also put your art on the outside. This is perfect. This is a Shepherd Fairey mural for the newly opened West Hollywood Branch Library, which seems perfect for there. Scotts Valley has these great papier-mâché, huge papier-mâché wild animals that just hang out on top of the shelves. And this is one of the giraffes, and they're really great. This is the Los Gatos Children's Area, that ceiling, which is a constellation, and it's accurate, and they do programs. Wow. Wow. They do programs about that. That was designed by the architect, designed and built, et cetera, by the architect. This is the Pearl Avenue branch. Again, this is very colorful. This is the children's area, and having art in the children's area is great. They had a theme for their design of nature. And so these were sort of mobiles that hung down and lighting that had reminiscence of vines and leaves, and it was really playful and sort of whimsical kind of art. This is a display. This is a history room in a library, not one we visited. And Capitola has a very active historical museum and historical museum board. And so we think that we will probably be partnering with our history museum people. We can have rotating exhibits, and then you can tie programming into that.
Mm-hmm. Watsonville also has a really nice example of this.
And last but not least, why put your gauges and instruments behind the scenes? This was a library that didn't. They had it out, and that you can, you know, if you have solar panels, which I hope we do. You can see the kilowatt hours that are being made. You can see the kilowatt hours that are being used. You can see the rain gauge. You can see all sorts of stuff. And it can be very educational, particularly if you have any kind of environmental programming going on. So just a summary of everything I already said. I don't need to go over this, but these were the key concepts. It was really a great tour, and I would urge people to, in your travels, do a little research ahead of time, find some libraries that have been recently built, and just go take a look at them.
Is there one that you love?
I love the Los Gatos Library. But I have to say, the inside of the Scotts Valley Library is great.
How familiar is everyone with UC Essex McHenry, the main library?
Oh,
I
haven't seen the after.
I really recommend. I know it's an academic institute. It's different. However, so many same obviously library concepts, and being in such a beautiful location, really taking advantage of the surroundings, very similar concepts, natural light, really hamstrung by the architecture that was there before and the way they
tied it together.
And one really, and I went to UCSC. I was a student library worker, and then I worked in the library, and so I have obviously long running heartfelt feelings for it, but. One of the things that the designers, they came in, they saw this amazing mid-century furniture that was all put into the library when it opened. They said, oh, my God. So they just recovered it all. Yeah. So if you go now, if you have any sense of what it was like before, that stuff has a new life. And I really, in seeing some of this, I see some possibilities to, you know, it's one thing to be sustainable, another thing to be cost-effective. It's not really, but I just like that idea. So, and one of the things they did was they took the reference desk that we all stood behind when we worked there, and they turn it around. They put a new facade on it. So the librarians down in the media center, they have the desk. The patrons see this shiny, shiny new thing. But the back end is the 1968 desk that we all knew and loved with the sticky labels and everything. So anyway, I would recommend it as another kind of tour if you haven't had an opportunity.
That is very cool,
I think. Different, you know, but some of the same ideas of tying in different needs and cafe spaces and things too. So I would
not
really,
a small group study.
I would highly recommend
boxes.
Just going and spending an afternoon up there because it's quite lovely and they could be a great partner for a lot of, I think, opportunities for us in terms of service as well as
they also did some interesting with the compact shelving there. Mm-hmm. It would be not so much in Capitola but maybe downtown. Mm-hmm. It would be something.
I have to think about that. That's an interesting idea, Martha. Because we do have collections.
Yeah,
that could maybe. It's the. They have the. Mm-hmm.
They're very easy to.
Yeah.
very.
You can get them electric rolling.
Yeah, you can get the.
You turn a handle.
Yeah, but even the handle moving ones are very easy. I had
a little bit steampunk. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's steampunk. The way they look.
But I might, you know, it's especially for downtown if we.
Everything's, we're so tight of space. It's a really interesting concept.
But what the way they did it up there, I think.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting.
I think it's worth another visit. So I saw elements here that reminded me of that, which was nice to see considering the difference of clientele. But
right.
I like that a lot. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any comments from the?
And just very quickly, I did review. You have all of this information online,
yes.
So I looked very carefully at all of your pictures and studied that in preparation for tonight's meeting. So I've seen it for the second time. Had some thoughts when I was looking at all of that stuff yesterday morning. But the most important thing that hit me, maybe it's because it's larger now, is that the thing about high ceilings, especially, now Capitola might not be a problem because you have moderate weather.
Right.
Like Santa Cruz has moderate weather. Scotts Valley, anything that they do there, think about conditioning that space. They have to air condition and they have to warm it. And so all of us sit here at this level, but all of the heat on a cold day is up there. And you have in terms of air conditioning. So I think it's a good idea, especially to think about the city and the county of Santa Cruz have goals for meeting how much energy is used in any building. And I think it's incredibly important to think about the energy use of the buildings along with the aesthetics. And the other thing is that in that regard, I hope that every one of our libraries, existing libraries, including Live Oak, including Francis 40, including downtown, use some of that $67 million for solar panels. To not have solar panels on all of the existing slopes of all of the existing libraries is to lose an incredible opportunity, and I'm going to be making that recommendation. The last thing that's good enough. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
Any other comments? I do have some comments based on my experience in designing facilities like this. You get two conflicting trends going on. One is open and airy, which is beautiful. I mean, it makes a much more attractive space. And the glass walls, high ceilings. It's a noise factor. That's why factories are so loud. And if you go into a restaurant that has big open space, flat ceilings, flat walls, you'll notice it's very noisy. That creates an atmosphere that's not conducive to what I go to the library for, which is to read and research and concentrate on things, even sit and think about what I'm reading. I go to the library a lot, but I don't go there to read because you can't read in that library. It's too noisy. When there's an activity going on any place in that building, it's impossible to read. Downstairs here, it's impossible to read. There's just too much noise. And in fact, before we came up to the meeting, I walked around a little bit, and anywhere on the corners of the downstairs, I could hear the staff talking at the little kiosk out in the middle there toward the front. It's a very noisy place, but it's not conducive to that. The other thing I've noticed in the pictures in the tour is there's a lot about aesthetics and a lot about group activities and things to please people, but there's not a lot about the logistics of actually coming to a facility, researching what you want to find something, and then finding it in the library. It's the area of library mechanics, I think, that it has gotten short shrift in terms of shelving, finding things in the shelves, looking it up somehow. I mean, it really is, even though it's on a computer, it's really no better now than it was the day of the card file. You looked it up, you saw what the number was, you go through the Dewey Decimal System and walk through and 9 times out of 10 you can't find it because the book is somewhere else, either it's out in the the new things, or it's on some other place. I would hope there'd be some thought and research into thinking of it from the perspective of the user coming into the library to find something specific, to do research, to find a specific book, and to sit down and read that in a place that's conducive to reading. Conflicting activities, just there's so much emphasis in activities. The libraries are becoming activity centers now. We have lots and lots of activity centers in our communities all over the place. The Live Oak Library, there's three other activity centers within a mile and a half of the Live Oak Library, so we don't need more activity centers there. What we need is more places where we can sit and enjoy reading a book, enjoy doing research, writing things down, things that require quiet and a supportive atmosphere that is undisturbed by lots of noise. And noise, the Live Oak Library is another one. The desk, the front desk, is right out in the middle of the library. And when people are talking at the front desk, you can hear it everywhere in the library. And nobody says shh anymore like the librarian used to do when I was in high school. So I would hope that in your considerations for remodeling our existing libraries and building new facilities, that the user would get as much consideration as the physical properties of the library.
I would just like to comment. I think the idea of having quiet study spaces is crucial to the longevity of a library. I think the combination, and I think this focus on having some study rooms and some closed off rooms would solve some of that issue, and also designating areas. And that's the thing I will go back again to McHenry, which is a large, very open space, very large building. It's a cement building. It's just noisy in general, but I think in the redesign, and I don't know if you've ever spent any time there, but there are definitely there are designated areas that are quiet, and it's like you hear a pin drop, mm-hmm. and you go down a floor, and it's like a mall. It's like, you know. So I think that I agree. I think there are ways to design space, and I think with modern architecture and design features and baffling and things, that we can definitely accommodate the need for community activity center and the desire to maintain the historical purposes of our libraries for quiet, you know, communal, meditative, quiet spaces. So I think it's possible.
Or if there are many, or even outside spaces. In our travels this past week, we looked specifically, like at the Live Oak Library. Out there in front, the beauty of the Live Oak Library is Corcoran Lagoon. I mean, that's why people go there, I think, as much as the library. But there was that area right out in front of the library that now just has some benches. And I was looking at that and thinking, this is a perfect place to extend a cover with skylights, much like when you walk into the Live Oak Library, there's skylights and there are the silhouettes of the birds, to have a covered open space with a cafe-style seating, even if it were just a large round table with some benches, and make that, weatherproof that from rain and bright sun, because it would be uncomfortable, but that would be a place where people could sit and have food and drink, and socialize while studying. But it keeps it outside of the library rather than going into the library, Live Oak Library right now, which is not that big and it's open and airy, and I just don't want to see that compartmentalized. But also at the Brant Sifforti Library, are you familiar with Brant Sifforti? In the back of the Brant Sifforti Library, there's a trellis, there's a landscape area that's sort of just gone to seed. But there's trellis over it, and it's approximately, I'm going to think, 10 by 14. That would be a perfect place, not Live Oak Library, for the umbrellas, because Live Oak Library is too close to the ocean and birds. They're just going to be covered with bird poop, and they're going to blow over. But the Brant Sifforti Library would be a neat place to have that concrete laid down in place of that grass that's just gone to weeds, and some cafe style seating out there with umbrellas under the trellis is quite high, So there would be some protection. And that, again, would be another place outside of the library, extending the library to outside and make that the socializing activity, have food or drink if you want to, there, so that you're providing that for teens and children or anybody who wants to do that without bringing it into the library. So I'm not, and I don't know about downtown, but those were the two that, right. that
I
you. Saw.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So I think we're a little bit late. So moving on. So strategic planning update, which doesn't leave you a long time.
Janice, do you want to come up and just give
us the quick... I'll just
be really quick. Thank you. Are you bringing props?
I'm bringing props. I'm bringing a big fat prop.
I'm in the middle of finishing, and I just brought so I went loose in things. What I have been doing is starting to gather the data that we have been collecting for the strategic plan. And right now, this is what it looks like. I don't have everything yet. I'm still waiting for some of the results from the Spanish language form. There were two forms, one last night and one last week, and I'm still waiting to get that. But we've had a wonderful, remarkable time being able to collect data from a lot of different people. We've had community meetings at each of the branches. And in addition to the community meetings, we've had two community meetings with Spanish-speaking people in the Live Oak area so that they can give us input on what they would like in the library. And I do, just following the conversation we just followed, not about buildings, but about services and the library. So the strategic plan is about services in the library, not necessarily specifically about a building, but obviously it has meaning for our buildings. So we've had community meetings. We've surveyed the staff in person, online, in paper surveys. We've surveyed all of you, and you have helped us. We have had 100, it looks like we might have a little more than 100 when we're finished, individual one-on-one conversations that either commissioners or members of the staff have conducted with one other person to talk in depth about challenges and strengths of our communities, what the library can do maybe to help or to support those things. So I have some of this are the reports from those conversations. I want to make sure I've thought of everything. We've done a paper survey online to people who didn't get to have a conversation, didn't get to a community meeting. We have paper surveys that were available in the branches. So we think when we finish, we're going to have input from at least 400 different people. So we're really pleased about that. We've made an effort to talk to people who don't have library cards and are not library users, as well as people who are. There are still people recording conversations. If any of you are sitting here thinking, I haven't done mine yet, it's not too late. We will still take that information. But I am starting to look at it. So we've collected this, and one of the things you may have forgotten, but I haven't forgotten, is that some of you agreed that you would be readers for this data, and some of the staff on our internal committee also agreed to that. So now that you see what we're talking about in terms of quantity, I do have to, before I make a copy of all this, I'm going to add the Spanish-speaking results, and then I'll have everything together. And I will organize this, so when, well, it's organized for me, but not necessarily. I will make the organization more obvious. So you will know what you're looking at when you're looking at conversation results and when you're looking at community results and that sort of thing. I really do need you to read it and look at it. I've started to look through it. I'm starting to see patterns. Susan started to look at some of it and started to see patterns. I can talk about some of what I want to see, but I don't know if that I should do that or just hold my peace until more people have had a chance to look at it. So one of my quick questions is, who is interested in being a reader and receiving this wonderful gift from me?
Cindy volunteered last time.
Gabe.
Cindy didn't.
I volunteered last time.
Okay. So a portion, you need to parse it out to a few people.
Well, yeah, I would like at least two people from two of the commissioners to take a look at it, so we have two different sets of eyes, if you're willing. And then
I think
it'd
be hard to parse out because I think you need to look at it holistically.
Okay.
I'm still up for it.
Okay.
And since Cindy's not here, she's got to stay up.
All right. Sign her up. Now, and I'll pass that to everyone in the audience as well. So then the question is, okay, yippee-ki-yay, I have this pile of paper. What do I do with it, or how do I look at it? And what I'm doing is I actually did sit and read through it all once so I could start trying to get it in my head, and that, for me at least, helps. I start to see patterns. But what we wanted to do is see if we could separate it a little bit by branch, because one of the things we said in the community meetings and in the conversations is that we are obviously going to want all our branches to have a certain common denominator, but we also want each of the branches to reflect their communities. So we have this idea, and I want to pass this out to you and see what you think. I'm going to give this to you even though you may not be getting the full pack, just to see. We wondered if taking a look at it in this way will help. Can you, yes, could you make sure everybody else gets a copy? Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Shelley. No, I think we have it.
We can share.
So we thought perhaps we could look at it from this framework, but we are totally open to suggestions about how else you wanted to look at it. When you look through it, there are things that will jump out at you again and again. At least they did for me. They seem to be for Susan as well.
Well, aren't some of the, I mean, I know from the interviews that I did, most people weren't talking about a specific branch. You know, or they were thinking more broadly of the library. In fact, I even had one person I talked to said she just loved that we had 10 branches that she could go and it didn't matter where she lived.
So we could have another category that allows for that system view.
Yeah, maybe the whole back page.
Maybe the entire back page. Mm-hmm. That's true. When you see the community reports and the surveys, a lot of people did identify the community.
Oh, yeah, well, we did ask where mm-hmm. they lived. But like I said, most of the people I talked to, that didn't seem to be the most driving thing about.
Yeah, actually, I didn't get that from reading through it either. Mm-hmm. I didn't, except in a couple of spaces where in a particular community it was kind of obvious that something had to be addressed. I really didn't get that.
Right, and I didn't talk to people just in Santa Cruz either. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked,
So we could just use the back for system reflections if we mm-hmm. want to do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other suggestions or ideas about anybody?
So let's start there.
Okay.
And then let's plan a meeting where we can then get together and talk it through.
Yeah. Because I really do want to hear what you have to say. As I said, I wrote down some of the things that pop out at me, but I really don't want to say anything to you guys.
No, you should. I mean, we should.
Yeah, go at it your own way.
Is that document available electronically?
This?
Not yet.
No.
The one you just had, the evaluation form.
I have a copy.
I'll go put it together for me and I can send it out.
Yeah, I have it, so I can email it out.
Okay, cool. So maybe we can do something on the flip side that says system-wide concerns or something like that. That would be great. Thank you, Yvonne. These exist electronically in lots of separate places, I thought you were asking. I will go ahead and make copies of this, but I wanted to get a sense of how many.
I would also love, though, if you find some really, there were some really gems out there.
Yes, there are some beautiful comments. There's some really beautiful things in there. Yeah, that will make all of us feel really proud. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, and if something occurs to you in the middle of the night, don't call me in the middle of the night. Give me an email.
Thank you. So now we're at the next board meeting. I was skipping my calendar. So our next meeting is scheduled for the 12th, and I think a couple of meetings ago we scheduled well out, but I think we should wait for the 12th to look at the calendar for the new year.
There is a calendar. There's a draft.
Is there?
Yeah.
It's
just.
It's the last page of the draft.
It's a proposal.
Proposal for 2017. Yeah. It's the third Monday of every month, except for January and February,
so
because
we can have a chance to look at this and just,
it's a holiday.
Like, it at our next meeting. You
when you have everyone, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't see that. I did read this online, but I didn't see that. Okay. Okay. So if there's no other comments, I guess we adjourn for the evening and see you on the 12th. And where are we on the 12th? Are we back out in
Aptos?
Aptos. Okay. Thank you. All right, thank you.